gonna say it. It's giving Captain America Civil War. Not Civil War, the But it's also like any other movie where there's scientists and any action type movie-ish.
All right, girl, you said it, so I'm going to say mine. It's giving Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire.
Just saying. I mean, yeah.
Hello, my friends, and welcome back to Gumption. I'm your host, Lil, and this is the podcast that helps you become the main character of your own life. Now, if anybody knows what it's like to be the main character, not only of their own life, but of the entire world, it is Taylor Swift. And while I recognize that she is definitely not for everybody, I have been a longtime fan, and I think that her cultural relevance is definitely something to be studied, let alone the fact that she is an excellent songwriter. This week, I'll be breaking down her newest album, The Tortured Poets Department, which turned out to be a double album including an entire second track list called The Anthology, with none other than my best friend, Morgan Bendel, who I'm just going to deem as the resident Taylor Swift expert on this podcast because we did an episode in preparation for the Eras Tour and talking about our experience of going together in Pittsburgh this past summer. A survival guide of sorts, which is definitely still relevant considering the tour is still going on. And we also spoke a lot about Taylor Swift in our original interview together, which is kind of just like a fun gumption on the go from the early days of the podcast when I first visited Morgan in Pittsburgh in her brand new apartment. Also, pretty ironically, as you'll hear when we get into the analysis, Morgan and I also saw the 1975 perform live, which is relevant because Maddie Healy happens to be the subject of many of the songs on this album, or so fans speculate. So here we are, and I'm always happy to have Morgan back, especially when it means that she wins a bet against Murphy, which was who could make more podcast appearances before the other person. Although this time around, I will issue a warning for our listeners. I don't think I've ever had to do this before, but the audio quality of this episode is going to be a little bit lower than average. I'm just letting you guys know that now. This was an extremely last-minute interview to the point that I wasn't even sure if I was going to be able to get this episode out because I literally asked Morgan hours before we did the interview, and we were having hella technical difficulties on Zoom. You guys know that I do put money into this podcast. Like, I pay for certain editing services and things to make it really good quality, but sometimes, especially when the Wi-Fi is iffy, you get that robot voice going on and there's like a delay when the other person is talking and there can just be no way to get around it. So my apologies, my loves. We thought it was more important to get you this episode in real time than to not, so we'll have to sacrifice a little bit, okay? We're going quantity over quality in this case, and you know what? Taylor Swift did the exact same thing with this album, so that is a perfect lead-in to our first section of analysis. And I have to say that my mom is expecting an intelligent review of an intelligent album, and I really hope I don't let you down, Mom. There's just so much noise on the internet about anything that Taylor does, so I really try to actually be thoughtful with what I'm sharing, and even though a lot of it is going to be my opinion, I hope that it provides meaning to you in some way rather than just contributing to all of the clamor and noise on the internet.
I'm gonna reign supreme on the number of times I get featured.
I feel like it was only right to bring you back. It's just perfect because it's all coming full circle. So I think you'll just have to be my Taylor Swift consultant, you know?
Yeah, I think I can do that.
It's a big responsibility, but someone has to fill those shoes.
I guess okay. It'll be me.
Before we dive too deep into anything, what were your initial thoughts when you were having your listening party hearing this for the first time?
Yeah, I don't think I spent enough time thinking prior to the album release, like, what would it sound like? I think I just was like, I'm just gonna let Taylor do her thing. And then I kind of thought it would be more folklore, Evermore vibes, which it, the second half kind of is. But my first initial thoughts were like, this is a lot of words and I need to know what is going on. Like, I was listening on Spot, but Krista and Kira, who I was having the little listening party with, they have Apple Music, so they had the lyrics immediately. There were a lot of just like, my jaw dropped, you know. Yeah, I was like,
same.
Wow. she really wants to talk about Maddie Healy and Joe and maybe Kim Kardashian. I mean, it's not like she hasn't done that before, but it's still surprising. But what were your initial thoughts? Because you listened to it more Friday morning.
Yeah,
so mine was kind of also in a wine haze. So
a wine haze, I love that. As she would have intended. You listened to it surrounded by huge fans in a wine haze late at night. I listened to it sitting in my car in the rain the next morning. My initial thoughts on the album, I listened to it in order, and the first 10 songs, I was like, rock on. I'm really enjoying these. And as I got towards the end, I was kind of getting burnt out a little bit. I was like, okay, this is a lot. I might need to revisit some of these. But I will say there were a lot of moments too where my jaw dropped. I was like, she did not just say that. That's crazy. Shocked and dismayed was my initial reaction, I guess. But not that I disliked it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I just was like, I'm gonna have to sit with this. And it's long and every song is so heavy. Even if there's like enough vibe to it. I listened to it twice. I listened to it at midnight. And then we stayed up for the, we knew that something was coming at two because by the time we finished listening, we were on Taylor Nation and they restarted their countdown. So Krista and I were like, okay, well, we're already up. But then when we saw the release, we're like, holy crap, 15 more songs. It's 2:30 in the morning. And unfortunately we do have jobs. So
yeah,
I guess fortunately we do have jobs, I should say, but unfortunately. And so we only listened to probably the first half. And then I listened to the rest of it during the workday and then re-listened to the whole thing. I need a nap. And not just because I stayed up late, but because it felt like I was reading like a really hard book.
Definitely very poet core. I totally think she did a good job of sticking to that theme because there's a lot of big words in there. And I consider myself a poet, but even just the amount of lyrics in these songs compared to some of her other songs, there's not as much repetition. Every verse is a really complex, there's a lot to unpack, and I don't even feel like I've taken it in all yet.
I will say, the whole time we were listening, Krista and I would be like, oh, Lily would love this. Lily would love this part. The wording of it, I would never think to switch things. Like, So Long London, when she did the switch saying so long versus like,
it's been so long. Yeah. After your first couple listens, which ones are standing out to you as favorites right now?
I do like a lot of them. I will say when I first listened, I really liked Florida. I like Down Bad. Who's Afraid of Little Old Me? I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. Yes. When she said I cry a lot, but I'm so productive. I was like, I'm actually not that productive. And I just cry a lot. But okay. It's so good. The second half, I think I like all of them together. I don't know which ones from the double album part are my favorite, but those would be the ones that from like the true Tortured Poets department stick out.
No, I totally agree. Who's Afraid of Little Old Me and I Can Do It With a Broken Heart are, I think, my two favorites right now. I really liked I Can Do It With a Broken Heart because it sounded like a bop, but it was pretty complex. But I have some beef with that song that I'll share later. I liked Down Bad and My Boy Only Breaks His Favorite Toys. I thought that one was good too. It's like a very 1989 type of song.
Yeah. I do like that one. I feel like that one is, I could listen to if I'm just like trying to keep the vibe upbeat. But So Long London is so good.
Yes. See, that's the thing. The slow songs, I feel like, are really powerful and meaningful. Would I say they're a favorite? I don't know, because that would mean they'd have to topple something off of Folklore from my list, you know? And as we know, I'm a Midnights and Folklore girly. So this album had some tough competition for me to try to like have any of these be a favorite.
Even now, as I'm looking at the track list, all of them are good. Like The Alchemy, Clara Bow. The Alchemy, I was like, wow, Travis made his mark. The more I listen to it, the more I like it.
I agree. And I think something about this album that stood out to me is usually when I listen to Taylor's albums, and I say this as a huge fan, there's always one or two songs that I'm just not crazy about. And even though I had favorites off of this one, every song is good. Like when I listened through, I was like, oh, this song is good in its own way. Like I wasn't like, I'm about this song, you know?
At first, when she dropped the second part, I was like, how is she going to write 15 more songs? But the second half also was less about her, maybe. It has more of the storytelling that people really liked about Folklore and Evermore.
I honestly see her vision. I see what she was going for here. And the fact that The timeline is so interesting on this. It's been the last few years that she's been writing this. I guess maybe we could get into that because obviously people online are speculating who different songs are about. And I'll admit, I haven't looked into that a ton because I kind of went into this album thinking a lot of it's going to be about Joe. There's probably going to be a couple songs that are referring to her new relationship with Travis. I'm not going to lie, I didn't really expect more than one song about Matty Healy, but a lot of people online are saying there's a lot of songs about him. And I don't know if that's true or not. That itself is a lot to unpack.
Yes, a lot of this is about Matty Healy. I feel like a lot of people online, maybe I'm just generalizing here, but sometimes a Swiftie in general gets so bogged down with the, this song can only be about one of them. And it's like,
right.
She can be like pulling from all these different experiences or even her friends' experiences into these songs. When we listened to The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, I was like, okay, this is about Matty Healy. But then I was like, this is about also, this applies to Scooter Braun in a way. So I think Matty Healy definitely had a big influence on her for this album. But I also kind of love that she was like, yeah, I was on a 6-year relationship with Joe, but I'm going to focus on my situationship with Matty Healy.
Yeah.
But I also think that there's more to the Matty Healy stuff than obviously us as the public could ever know. I mean, there were rumors about them 10 years ago.
Right. I mean, just depending on where you are in your life when you're in certain relationships or situationships, sometimes the duration doesn't matter and things can affect you way more, even if it's a shorter time.
Also, I kind of like the idea of thinking, how is Matty Healy receiving this if he's even listening at all?
Yeah.
Like, I think it makes it more fun. Like, no offense to Joe. I'm sure he has his own personality. I don't know enough about him. Like, it just is more fun, I feel like. And also, I think maybe she wanted to preserve a little bit of Joe's, like, he doesn't really have that well-known of, like, career. I feel like that's rude to say, but
no,
he's not
true.
Well-known in his own right besides being Taylor Swift's boyfriend. So, like, to have a whole album that destroyed him would be kind of tough. Whereas unlike Matty Healy, John Mayer, Jake Gyllenhaal, Harry Styles, they have their whole own persona outside of it.
Yep.
So they can kind of bounce back. I don't know if he really cares that much, though, because it sounds like Joe kind of sucked. I just wanted to text her and be like, can I just know? Can I just know why you didn't make it all about him?
You know what? I really like this point, though, because I think you can look at it two ways. If she's really trying to slam Joe point, actually not writing as many songs about him after a long relationship where she clearly thought they were going to be married, and for whatever reason, they never got married, that's a slam in itself. Like, yeah, we were together for all this time. And obviously, yes, there's a lot of songs that are already about him. But to shift the focus away from that, I think is kind of just, all right, you're irrelevant and everyone knows it, which that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is Taylor Swift is obviously very culturally relevant. For better or for worse, these other men she's dated, John Mayer, Jake Gyllenhaal, Calvin Harris, Harry, even Matty Healy, as much as, you know, I love the 1975, but I don't love him as a person.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. They're culturally relevant in their own way. So it's her knowing her audience of like, okay, I'm a pop star. I'm a pop star. Like, I'm going to sing about my ex rock star boyfriend. It's just speaking to that cultural relevance. And I think that's very interesting. So honestly, more power to her.
The Apple Music playlist, which you're saying a lot of those songs were already about Joe, but she's highlighting them in a different context. So it's like, she's already spent a lot of time telling us about relationship. She's telling us about Joe and you guys maybe took them one way. Here's another way to think about it. I think writing about this long-term situationship is way different for her because we've heard her talk about being in love a lot.
Yeah, like a lot. And this actually brings up something I want to talk about. This I can do it with a broken heart point. Like I said, this is my favorite song on the album right now. But my issue with it, and it's maybe this is me being selfish and wanting to hold on to the narrative that I've had in my head all these years. Okay, so the Eras Tour obviously was super successful. Generally, the experience of the Eras Tour was very positive by people who attended it. She really seemed to be enjoying it. And then this song, I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, it's a great song. And I totally understand what she's saying of like, this is my job. I had to do this very publicly while I was dealing with a really hard situation, i.e. the breakup with Joe. But it kind of felt a little insulting as a fan to be like, oh, like, you know, I was up there and I'm so depressed and I'm miserable and I was lying to you, which, like, okay, she's a performer to a certain extent. I understand not everything is authentic, but I do feel that authenticity is part of her brand. So to be like, yeah, I just tricked you all, haha, into thinking I was happy. That made me like a little mad. I don't know. What do you think about that?
It's so interesting you say this, because when I heard the end lines, because I'm miserable and nobody even knows, try and come for my job, I literally was like, I think that's gonna not sit well. Who is coming for her specific role? Like,
no one.
I can never understand what it's like to have millions and millions of people wanting to see you and wanting to put on a show. I also think if she publicly come out and said, like, I'm gonna postpone something, or I am going through this breakup. I mean, people already were making assumptions when she was performing her surprise songs every night. Yeah. Like, oh, she looks so angry because this song's about Joe. She looks so upset. This is about Joe. It's like, I don't know. It felt kind of weird to me, but I do like that song a lot.
It rubs me the wrong way, but at the same time, this is a great song. So I had such mixed feelings.
It feels really weird to me also, because she's in the middle of the tour. Like, she hasn't done all of Europe and she's coming back to the US. So it's like, now that she's like airing this grievance maybe that she has about having to perform through this hard time in her life, like, will the Eras tour be different? I mean, yeah, it feels very practiced when you see it. Like, it is.
This one I just felt like was particularly interesting because it's very much leaning into like the 1989 Midnights sound. Mm-hmm. And it's an upbeat bop, but then the words are, I'm so depressed, I'm miserable, which I see the dichotomy that she's making. I do understand it. But I'm just like, I don't know how she wants us to react to that song. Does she want fans to apologize and say, like, we're sorry? But then you invite us into your life as like a performer who's profiting off of your fans. I'm conflicted.
Yeah. I mean, as much as the song is speaking of a relationship with her fans, I think her naming the song I Can Do It With a Broken Heart is like more a dig at Joe and or Maddie Healy, being like, if you thought you were gonna break me, I wasn't gonna let it show, you know.
I like that.
I don't think she, if she genuinely felt like she couldn't perform, she hasn't canceled shows to begin with. It's a feeling that I don't think most people can ever relate to. Like, there's nothing in my life that would be relatable ever.
My final note on this song will be, in that context, it definitely can be about like her resilience. And that is interesting. Like you said, you can't make me break down in public. I'm going to be better than ever and show you that I can do it without you, kind of thing, which I like that messaging for sure. And honestly, even though it's not relatable to the same level, I did kind of relate to it in the sense of dealing with a loss and how you kind of just have to keep going and doing stuff. And even if you're very sad, it's like, well, I gotta keep doing it. So in a weird small way, I kind of related to the song, but obviously, you know, I'm not performing on stages for 75,000 people. So it's not like whatever I'm doing is quite at that level of public visibility.
Yeah. But I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, even if you go, like you're saying, through a loss, even if it's a breakup, your life still goes on. You still have to get up every day and go to work. You still have family responsibilities. And sometimes you have to put on a smile. I like that too. I like that explanation of it. I didn't think about it really like that. Because sometimes I feel like I get too, well, this is kind of a different point that I kind of mentioned to you earlier though. Like, even in this conversation, I mean, I feel like it's so bogged down with her literal experience that I forget that I can relate it to my own, which is weird because what I like a lot about her music is that I can relate to it. But on the first couple listens, it's so like, who did this to Taylor? What happened to Taylor? That I find myself struggling to have the specific relation that I love about her music until weeks or months have gone by.
Okay, y'all, how we doing? Because that was like 10 minutes of us going completely a mile a minute. And it's only about to get more chaotic from here, because at this point, the Zoom lag was so severe Then Morgan and I had to transition to FaceTime, and I simply recorded our entire conversation with a voice memo on my phone. So it's kind of fun. It's kind of as if you guys are on the phone with us in real time as we're having this conversation. We've got a little bit more ground to cover, and then I'm going to give my personal review, because even after Morgan and I's breakdown, I have listened to the album probably 4 or 5 more times, and I have some deeper opinions that have developed throughout that process.
One thing I wanted to cover was the features on this album. There were only 2, just Florence and Post Malone.
Yeah.
And I love Post Malone. I love Florence and the Machine. Mm-hmm. I definitely think Taylor's notorious for not letting her features really have a shining moment on the songs.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, to start, I like Post Malone. He's cool, whatever. I think originally it was supposed to be Maddie Healy on this first track. That's what I've been seeing online, which I'm like, that would have been really good. But this is really good. I have to say, I love the AI version that I saw all over TikTok of Fortnite, but this is really good. He is like the bridge.
So he has a good decent part on that one.
Right. Like, I am definitely way more like content with this than when she came out with I Bet You Think About Me, and I was so excited to hear Chris Stapleton, and I was like, okay, I can hear him. Let him shine. Let him have a moment.
Yeah, there should be some justice for all of these people she's had featured. I mean, I know with Lana Del Rey, she released the more Lana version of that song, but there were so many other artists before that. She had Maren Morris on a song, and you could barely hear her.
And Maren's just in the background doing her thing, not a shining moment again.
That is one thing. I bet working with Post Malone, because he's such a big artist, I think he is one of the number one artists on Spotify, statistics-wise. Probably. She probably had to include him more, or else he wouldn't have agreed to do it. That's what I'm thinking happened there. That song would have been so good with Maddie Healy, like, though.
I know! It would have been so good. Like, also, this is simultaneously, like, making me mix in 1975 again.
I know.
That feels wrong, but okay.
You know, it's interesting to think about her songs that could be about Maddie Healy, but what's more interesting to me now is thinking about his songs that could be about her.
Yes. If you're too shy, let me know. Yes. Could be about her. American. You could apply it to anybody. But why not just give it to Taylor? She loves to say about London. You know what I mean? Maybe he has been kind of writing to her a lot. The whole point of the album just feels like they are the tortured poets, you know?
Yeah. That's such a good interpretation of it. And also, one of my favorite songs by the 1975 is Paris, and she has a song called Paris that was on Midnight's, and that song is old. That song's from like 2012, so it's been around for a while, but honestly, it could be very interesting if that was about Taylor Swift, and we had no idea.
I mean, even if they weren't in a physical relationship, I feel like the point of this album is her saying, he's always my what if. He's always been, if we were at the right place in the right time, like, you're the one I want. I mean, I feel like that's what I've seen fresh out the... First of all, the name Fresh Out the Slammer, I just... Anyway, but I feel like that's what... I've seen stuff where it's like, you ended your 6-year-long relationship with Maddie Healy. Okay. Okay, Miss Taylor. Like... So, yeah. I don't know. I just... As someone who only recently knows about the 1975 or has been into them since, like, last fall, thanks to you, I don't know enough of their lore, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To compare.
Well, the funny thing is, I think because they've been kind of like a famous indie band for so long, I just thought like, oh, he's probably sleeping with so many girls because he's like kind of the rock star vibe. So I never assumed that one of them would be someone famous that I actually listened to their music. It was never on my radar. So now I'm going to have to go back and be like, wait, like, I don't know. Kind of interesting to think about. In the spirit of like why the double album anthology setup and not just one big ass album. Yeah. I'm just like trying to figure out what's sticking out to me.
Well, a huge difference between them is Jack Antonoff is pretty heavy on the first half and Aaron Dessner is really heavy on the second half.
There is definitely a distinct difference in the sound. Some of the songs, the music didn't match what I thought it should sound like with the words that were happening, if that makes sense. I do feel like some of the songs, the background music sounded like a portfolio builder for Jack Antonoff, whereas it could have been more chill and not as synthy pop vibes.
a lot of people are speculating, should Jack Antonoff and Taylor back up a little bit? Like, should she explore new producers to include in the mix? I mean, they've been working together since 1989. And 1989 is my favorite Taylor Swift album. That's pretty much my statement on it, in case anyone's curious. But I feel like because it was so, they, like, had so much creativity, it was the first time they were really working together.
Yeah. It almost feels like it's been fleshed out at this point, that partnership.
But I also feel like she couldn't have done this album of such, like, raw feeling and emotion around people she hasn't known. Like, maybe it's not as, like, sonically different or new, but, like, the meanings and everything of the songs, like, I don't think she maybe would have felt comfortable.
Yeah.
With people who didn't know her so intimately.
Yeah, maybe she needs that environment of close friends to be kind of conducive to this level of vulnerability. That's an interesting thought.
It was a lot. It was a lot. And, like, it's hard because it's like, Taylor, you do probably have final say.
Wanted to ask you, do you think there's any songs on here about Travis? Because I have a couple thoughts about that, but I wanted to hear what you think first.
I was laughing the whole time I listened to The Alchemy the first time. Because she gave us, like, it was perfect. That song is so catchy. I love it. Like, the references in it are just, it's perfect. It's, I love it for her.
Me too.
You know what I mean? If I was dating a Super Bowl winning football player, I'd want to write a song about it too.
I agree. Listen, I'm a Travis Kelce stan. I love a Cleveland Heights boy. Like, I'm a huge supporter of him. And people say very mean things. They're like, he's dumb and whatever. And, you know, like, honestly, who am I to say?
Who cares if he's dumb?
She's clearly happy, so that's all that matters to me. What I like is that he's just so excited to be around her. Like, I feel, I don't know, I think that's kind of the whole thing with this Joe thing, is that, like, ultimately it boiled down to him not being proud of that relationship for whatever reason and not wanting it to be as public of a thing as she did. And
yeah.
I don't know. I like it. I liked So High School as well. I think that's about Travis.
Yeah, that one, I liked it too. But the part where she's talking about the Grand Theft, the stuff she just mentions in it, I understand it is high school, but it just had me cringe for a second. But I do want to mention one thing about The Alchemy. When she said, these blokes warm the benches, I was like, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. It's so good.
It literally is. I just love that she's thrown so many British people under the bus. It's, like, honestly hilarious. It's so patriotic of her.
It's so patriotic. Just a small town girl from Pennsylvania, and her patriotism is showing. Do you want to talk about the manuscript?
Yes. The manuscript. I've only listened to that one once so far. So here, I have the lyrics right here.
I just thought it was a really good album closer. I just liked it, but it's about a younger woman being with an older man. So I've seen it could be about John Mayer, Jake Gyllenhaal. I just like the idea of the song. I just thought it was a really good closer to the album, even though Clara Bow is also a good closer for the first half. It's like confusing to think about them both as closers, but I feel like they both kind of are.
No, I get what you're saying. I think Clara Bow is speaking to, like, her broader impact as an artist, because she compares herself to this woman, Clara Bow, who I didn't know much about. I had to do some Googling. And then Stevie Nicks, obviously, who is a different generation, but just as famous, basically. And then throwing her name in that mix is almost conflating herself with these two women. And I think that's an interesting thought to explore. But I agree, the manuscript was a really good song. And what I liked about it, too, is this whole vibe of the album promotion is the story's yours now. It's yours as a fan to relate to and engage with. And even though it was my story, now it's bigger than me. I think that's a cool idea, and that's addressed in this song. Because at the end she says, and at last she knew what the agony had been for. Almost like her experiences are for her to connect with her fans.
When did she have time to do this? That is my, like, that question sits on the forefront of my brain as I listen to this.
I agree. I mean, I don't even have time to respond to people's texts sometimes. Like,
then did you see her Instagram story of her cooking dinner with Travis? When did she have time to do normal people things? I don't understand.
Wait, can I speak about that from a marketing perspective? Because, yeah. I mean, listen, we know Taylor Swift is a person and she does real people things sometimes. But we also know that she is a marketing genius. And I will say, just sharing that video of her cooking and playing tennis and doing random little cute things that, like, regular people do is probably the smartest move she could have made from a marketing perspective. Because it's like, okay, yeah, I just released this super heady intellectual album that's speaking about all my past relationships, but this is what I'm doing now and I'm living my best life. It was visually very crazy for me to see those things. And I think it's smart. I don't know.
No, I agree. Her persona is huge.
Yeah.
She's the biggest pop star right now. I don't know if Beyonce is considered a pop star. I feel like she's her own category, really.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, it's just, it was like, oh, she does normal things. I forgot that would be possible.
Yeah. I'm looking at the lyrics for But Daddy, I Love Him, because that was another song I really liked. And I wanted to talk.
Okay.
Wait, did you not like that one? I'm so curious.
I need to know, like, what did you think the first time when she said, I'm having his baby?
I mean, yeah, that was definitely, that was a jaw-dropping moment for me, for sure. So I cannot remember if I talked about this on the podcast last time, but I think I've said this in our group chat before. I am a huge firm believer that the song Bigger Than the Whole Sky is about having a miscarriage. I don't want to speculate about that more than just saying that. That's what the lyrics seemed to signal to me, but I hope that that's not the case, obviously. I hope that that didn't happen to her. I feel like she kind of mentions it multiple times on this album, and I wonder if either it was maybe the thought of having kids with Joe or something actually happened where there was a pregnancy scare. But it just seems like she's playing with that idea of, but what if I was, like, gonna have his kids at one point? What would you all have done? Or how would the public have reacted? So that was, like, kind of my take on it, because then she says, no, I'm not, but you should see your faces.
It made me laugh, like, at first, because I was like, wow, she really got us. Like, yeah. I'm looking at my face, or I'm not looking at my face. I wasn't sitting with a mirror in front of me. But, like, in the moment, I was like, why is she saying that? And then she was like, no, just kidding. And I was like, okay, she got me.
Yep. No, I agree.
She mentions that in Peace, too, about the idea of having kids.
True.
With Joe. Assuming, you know, they had a future together of some sort. And yeah, I think it's a good point. Like, she's kind of grappling with the idea of, like, am I going to be a mother?
Yeah, and, like, that's why I don't want to speculate, because obviously that's a very private thing, and it's weird that, like, people talk about that with her when that's her life and she could do whatever she wants to do. But this song reminded me so much of Love Story. And obviously Love Story is kind of playing on the Romeo and Juliet trope of the family's disapproval. I think in this case, she talks about being a dutiful daughter. There's just so much going on. It's honestly hard to figure out. But my point is, people have so many opinions about her relationships. And it's crazy to think that she's just figuring this out for the first time like everybody else. Like, she may be in her 30s, but this is her first time living her life just like anyone else. And, like, when she talks about, like, telling her mom things, it's just crazy to think about that she might be facing these issues that other people face. Of, like, your parents not liking someone you're dating, or them liking someone that is maybe not the best for you.
I assume this song is about, again, Maddie. Maybe it's about Joe, too. She got a lot of backlash from fans about dating him, too.
Okay, I'm pulling up this video.
So I enter into evidence.
Okay, girl, stop talking. Stop talking, Taylor. There we go. People were comparing it to the aesthetic of Poor Things, which I definitely think it's playing on a lot.
Well, it's also interesting because aren't her and Emma Stone good friends?
Yes.
And then I saw that Emma Stone and Joe Alwyn are in a movie together coming up.
Yes, they are in. So Yorgos, who directed Poor Things, he just announced another movie. And not only are Emma Stone and Joe Alwyn both in it, Margaret Qualley, Jack Antonoff's wife, is also in it, which is crazy.
Oh my God. Is Joe going to be okay?
I don't know. You know, actually, as I'm pulling this music video up because it doesn't want to freaking load, I saw someone on Instagram was like, everyone's worried about Joe. Guys, he's going to be fine. He still makes six figures in residuals every year from Taylor Swift's like co-writing credits, and I was like, that's crazy.
That is crazy. I'm not really like worried about him financially. Like, I no offense.
I'm with you on that. I think we should both put on the music video with no sound and live react.
Okay. I wish they would have done it in the style of the video game. That'd have been hilarious.
I agree. That would have been very funny.
Like, you're telling me Post Malone doesn't play Fortnite with his friends? Come on.
You're telling me Travis Kelce doesn't play Fortnite with his friends? Probably does.
Like, now this is a new question. Do people play Fortnite still? I don't really know. I really have no clue. Okay, I'm watching. She's in the bed.
Okay, ready, set, go. The eyebrows are giving, like, 1920s Hollywood star, which I kind of like.
Yeah. Oh, I like this part when she's looking in the mirror and...
Oh, yeah. The face tats, it's honestly brilliant.
Are they the same ones that Post Malone has?
Oh, they are, because it says always tired and stay away. See, that's cool. I like that.
Also, I love this dress on her. I don't know what it is about her wearing this dress that I'm like, wow.
Honestly sick, and the black and white contrast is very visually pleasing.
I agree.
I was saying to Murphy, I think Post Malone looks really good in this video. I don't think of him as someone that's conventionally attractive, but he looks hot in this. I don't know why.
No, I literally agree. I said that yesterday when I was watching the video. I was like, okay, Posty. Also, just think calling him Posty is like adorable.
I agree. You know her with those visual effects, the swirling clouds and whatnot. That reminded me of Lavender Haze a lot.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I remember what I wanted to say about this. First of all, they got chemistry, which is wild.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, she picks a rando actor to play her love interest in music videos.
Right.
So I thought it was cool that she had Post Malone be that in this one.
I mean, thinking of this, like, Post Malone could have been Maddie Healy.
Yeah.
And I love them in this together, but, like, I would have really loved to see that.
That's crazy to think about. And this part is cool as hell. And the fact that Ethan Hawke is in this just also threw me off, like, a lot.
Okay, I'm going to say it. It's giving Captain America Civil War. Not Civil War, the first one. But it's also like any other movie where there's scientists and any action-type movie-ish.
All right, girl, you said it, so I'm going to say mine. It's giving Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire. Just
saying. I mean, yeah.
Also, what is going on here? She's just, like, sat on top of the telephone booth. I don't know what's
happening. Yeah, I didn't really, like, I don't know. The visual of it is cool, but I guess I didn't understand the jump.
Yeah. I have to say, this might be one of my favorite music videos of hers of all time.
I want to throw something through a mirror.
I know. Like, that seems like it would be fun. Low-key cathartic.
I do like the end clip where they're holding hands. Ew, I think that's cute.
I agree. I really like the young Frankenstein and Ben's bride imagery that she's kind of going with there. It's very much my vibe.
Much my vibe. No, it's really cute. Overall, I liked it. I like her in Post Malone.
I do too.
Sorry, Travis.
You know, maybe this can be my ending note, but what I love about Travis is that he's just along for the ride. Like, he's just vibing with whatever is going on. I get the feeling from a lot of her ex-boyfriends that they would have been very butthurt about a song she wrote about someone else. I feel like he's just here for her success. You're with me now, so who cares, you know?
He does seem like a genuinely good guy.
Yeah.
He's secure in himself. He's confident in them, in their relationship. Sorry, other guys, you couldn't handle that.
Yeah, what more do you need, honestly?
Right, like, it is crazy, though, that, like, Joe had the opportunity to be with Taylor Swift.
Yeah, he's just a bloke warming the bench from London, and he blew it.
So good.
This was fun. It's always a pleasure, Morgan, but I really enjoyed our debrief getting to be a little bit more formalized, and I can't wait to continue to share my opinions as we discover more lyrics and things about the album.
Well, I'm glad you asked me to do it. I was like, you know, I have a lot of thoughts. Why not air them out?
Exactly. Okay, y'all. It has officially been 10 days since the release of Taylor Swift's newest studio album, The Tortured Poets Department. I think Morgan and I's conversation about our thoughts was really valuable because it truly was our initial thoughts after like one or two listens of the album
And we also had not talked about it with each other yet. That was our first debrief together. So it was truly just the raw thoughts, which I think a lot of people, before they share things online, especially when it comes to something that Taylor has done, they look into different things and they're listening to other people's opinions. So that was truly a very unbiased take, which I like. But now I've listened to it quite a bit more and I want to share my final thoughts and comments on the album. First of all, I want to note that I am torn about the number of songs. I stand by my opinion that there's too many songs on the album and that some of them could honestly go and it would still be great. But as I mentioned, none of them stood out to me as actually bad, more so just a song that I would listen to one time and then never listen to again. For me personally, these are the songs that I would cut from the album if I were Taylor Swift's editor. I'm Gonna Get You Back, The Albatross, I Hate It Here, I Look in People's Windows, Cassandra, Peter, Robin, and The Bolter. Specifically with the songs that have names in them, I think she does some of these really well. For example, Clara Bow, Thank You Amy, and Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus, although that title is pretty wild. But one thing we know about Taylor is that she's always gonna give little hints as to who the song is about, even if, to use a literary term, they're just red herrings and she's just trying to confuse the fan base to get more engagement and discussion around the songs. I think these ones that I named just are doing a little bit too much. I feel like they are trying to be too clever with that, trying to take a name that has some association with the person she wrote the song about, and then obviously naming the song after that. I just felt like it was doing too much. This actually leads me into my next point, which is the entire discussion around who are these songs about, what happened to Taylor. As you heard in Morgan and I's conversation, we both get caught up in that stuff too. I think it's impossible not to because Taylor Swift herself wants that discussion. In addition to, from a marketing perspective, just trying to get as much attention on her songs as possible, I do genuinely believe that that is part of her personality to kind of want people to speculate about her in that way, which is kind of ironic because she does complain about that a lot in certain songs as well. And sometimes I find myself getting annoyed with the inability of many Swifties, myself included, to just take the song at face value or at what the lyrics are saying, what it sounds like, and either like it or dislike it. There's a lot of songs I think people have opinions about that they normally wouldn't really care about because of the people that they're associated with. And it's very easy to think that this phenomenon is exclusively tied to Taylor Swift. But I had a realization in the car today when I was listening to one of my favorite Fleetwood Mac songs that this is actually something people have done all throughout time, so I really can't blame Taylor for doing it in this way. The song I'm speaking about in particular is Silver Springs by Fleetwood Mac, specifically the live version, live at Warner Brothers Studios in Burbank, California, on May 23rd, 1997. During this performance of Silver Springs, Stevie Nicks and her ex-lover, Lindsey Buckingham, also a member of Fleetwood Mac, by the way, have this very bewitching moment where they're singing directly to each other, not breaking eye contact, and the words of the song are so powerful. At this point, they had been broken up. There were lots of stories that had broken about infidelity in the relationship, and it was clearly a very publicized one because the band was so big at the time, just like many of Taylor Swift's very public breakups. But a few years ago on social media, the video clip resurfaced, and a lot of people started referring to it as the Stevie Nicks hex, because it literally looks like she is putting a spell on this man as she's singing these lyrics right to him in front of thousands of people. These are the lyrics in question. Time casts its spell on you, but you won't forget me. I know I could have loved you, but you would not let me. I'll follow you down till the sound of my voice will haunt you. You'll never get away from the sound of the woman that loves you. Honestly, if you just Google this performance, it is worth watching. The entire performance is lovely, but I have watched this video so many times because you can tell that there is major tension and chemistry there and there's something happening that is very intimate between them in that moment that is then in front of all these people. And with that, this is why I say I cannot blame Taylor for wanting to air out her thoughts about this Maddie Healy situation, especially because he is also a singer and a performer.
I feel like this may have been her only relationship with another musician that was really hard-hitting for her and really affected her in a way that even she did not expect. And Morgan mentioned that she thought the entire album name, The Tortured Poets Department, was sort of a play on this idea that since 2014, when Maddie Healy and Taylor Swift were first rumored to be dating or hooking up or whatever, the two of them have been communicating with each other through their live performances, through messages in their lyrics and songs, all this time, even as the other people were in a relationship. So the idea of the tortured poets is kind of that they're both tortured by being together, but also by not being together, and by having to communicate through their poetry and their artistry. It's very interesting when you think about it. And other iconic artists like Stevie Nicks have done the exact same thing, which I'm sure Taylor knows because she mentions Stevie Nicks in her Clara Bow song, where she conflates herself to Clara Bow, who is a much older performer than the rest, Stevie Nicks, who's more like our parents' generation, and Taylor Swift, who is this generation's biggest performer, I would say. Also, I believe this is by far her most vulnerable album that she has ever done. And while some of the vulnerability hides behind the synthy pop background that is very Bleachers-esque of Jack Antonoff's production of the album, I think in general there is a lot of pain that comes through in these lyrics. And it's pretty admirable that she decided to share these songs with the world. She very easily could have come out with another Midnights type of album where, yes, there are some sad and emotional songs, but for the most part, they're pop bangers. They were hits at the Eras Tour, they're very singable, and they're not really getting into those deep feelings of hers. So it's almost a rebellion against the rest of her portfolio to say, like, I am going to tell this story, and this is my story. It's not the story of James and Inez, like with Folklore, these made-up characters that maybe were somewhat based on her life, but mostly just for the artistry of telling a story that was not about her. This is clearly about experiences that she's gone through, and I think it's pretty cool that she decided to share those things in a very raw way. And maybe some of her audience is too young to understand that. I personally believe that Taylor Swift's intended audience for an album like this is people around her age and maybe slightly younger. Looking at her entire music career as a whole, I feel like her intended audience has kind of been that throughout her entire life. It's grown up with her, it's shifted with her. And there are people out there who are sometimes unwilling to recognize that. That was sort of the whole deal with the Reputation era. It was a very much Miley Cyrus breaking out from Disney Channel, kid shows, and Hannah Montana. I'm an adult now. I can write about adult things. Taylor kind of did the same thing with that album, and it definitely got some negative backlash because people just wanted her to continue writing songs like You Belong With Me and Our Song. And while I think the public opinion has shifted there because she has shown that she can be very complex and adult as she herself is an adult who's going through these real things, since she still attracts a younger fan base of like high schoolers, it can be tough for younger people to relate to these songs. I don't know that I would have related to many of these songs when I was in high school. I wasn't thinking about something like marriage at that time in my life. So I think the audience that this album is really gonna hit with is like late 20s, early 30s, maybe mid 30s, that range of 10 years. And I honestly commend her for not just catering to making another album of poppy bops and calling it a day. Like, she really wanted to share what was coming straight out of her heart, and that's pretty cool. That's on Gumption. Thank you all so much for listening. Share this with a Swiftie friend, and I encourage you to engage with the interactive feature on Spotify if that's where you're listening, and also with our Instagram account at GumptionPod. That is always the place with the most current updates about who's going to be on the show, if we're running any giveaways, which we just closed one, by the way, and for fun content to engage with the Gumption community. I'm Lil, and I'm the host of Gumption. Love you guys. Bye.